This is Biz. I'm a part-time working mom with a big kid and a little kid.
And I'm Teresa. I have a family business, two young kids, and a baby.
This is a show about life after giving life. Don't listen with your kids, because there will be swears. This is One Bad Mother. This week on One Bad Mother, what's up with pirates? Plus, Biz kisses camp goodbye, Teresa masters the morning, and we talk to Angela Garbez about her new book, Like a Mother, A Feminist Journey Through the Science of Pregnancy.
Arrgh!
Ahoy there, Teresa! There be pirates in the booth today.
The R is where I culminate my pirate festivities.
That's enough, as far as I go.
And even that was a stretch.
I know. Once again, apologies to our guests whose titles get announced, and then we come in and yell something like "Arrgh!"
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Teresa, how are you?
I'm good. I had a crazy morning, but I'm getting really good at mornings.
Oh, good.
Yeah. So, like, Jesse had a migraine this morning, which happens a lot, but this was a particularly bad one. And he was, like, trying to not take his medication because he's trying not to have rebound headaches, blah, 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 blah. So he was totally out for the count. And by the way, if we didn't have kids, like back when we didn't have kids, I would have like dropped everything to take care of him.
Oh, yeah.
Like it was that bad.
Yeah.
I would have like been taking care of him, like helping him. This morning, it was just like, oh, great. Okay. That means I just have to take care of all these other people by myself and get them where they need to go. But I did it. And one way that I did that was I've started doing this thing in the morning where instead of just reminding my kids like 12,000 times what the next step is and they're getting ready for the morning routine.
Yep.
I made Grace and Oscar each their own little list of to-dos for the morning, and it's numbered. And when they get to the end, they get a sticker for their achievement chart and they get their gummy vitamins.
Yum.
And I went so far as to, I think we got this from somebody on the show back in the day, but I put tape on the floor with their names on it by the front door showing like this, once you stand here, I know you're done with all the steps.
Yeah.
And who knows how long this will last, but it is definitely helping, especially with Oscar. Like, he seems particularly into it, and that's a big change, because for a long time, I was, like, really having to, like, basically dress him and, like, just do so much of the work to, like, get him away from his toys to, like, doing the stuff. And now he's kind of psyched about doing all the stuff and, like, that sense of independence, and he's really into it. So, like, this morning, he and Curtis were both up at like 5:30, which great, but but because they were up so early, like he was like totally ready to go and was kind of done playing, was like asking to do like big art projects and stuff by like 7:30 or 7:15. And I had this moment, and Grace hadn't even gotten out of bed. She wasn't even awake. And I had this moment where I was like, I could just take you to school because like his preschool opens at 7 a.m.
Yeah.
We don't usually take him that early, but like I totally could.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's one less person for me to like have talking at me in the morning. And he seems ready. So I said, do you want to go to school right now? And he was like, yes. And I was like, great.
Wow.
So I piled him and Curtis in the car and I told Gracie what was happening and didn't bother telling Jesse because
he's out.
He was asleep.
Yep.
And we took Oscar to school. And I felt like I'd unlocked something a little bit. Like it was like, you know, this is really hard. I still had to come back home and help Gracie get ready and then get her off where she was going to go and all that. But like, I really felt like, oh, I saw a door open, you know, and I took it and it was helpful.
Good.
And that was only true because of all the like other morning setup stuff that I had in place.
Nice.
So, yeah, I'm feeling good about mornings.
Way to walk through that door.
Thank you.
And head towards that light.
Yeah, exactly.
Put one foot in the grave.
Great. How are you?
I'm good. Goodbye, camp. All right.
Oh.
So, this is just a classic example of what we have talked about in the past, which is nothing is ever able to be consistent or planned.
Okay. Yes. So, like, I'm with you that far.
Remember
I got Katie Bell into a summer camp sort of last minute when I realized we needed stuff to do for the summer. Mm-hmm. Got her in it. And she just hasn't been able to go for a life. She went like for a week. It was a 3-week camp. She went for a week. Mm-hmm. The next week, she was sick for like 2 days with like just a summer cold.
Yeah.
And then like went back for 3 days. And then this is her last week of camp. And on Monday, she was sick. We took her to the doctor. She has like a double ear infection.
Oh, my God.
And so she's been home with like a fever. Ugh. And so like awful. There's basically 2 days left of camp. And it's a little like she can't go swimming. Yeah. I'm not sure. Yeah. Do I run to like hurt? You know, I mean, even though her fever just started to go, you know, like, she's not going back to camp.
Yeah.
She's not going back to camp. I didn't have a week of having time to myself.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, I was like, oh, this will be the week where I will put in this thing because I, for the first time, don't have a show or a thing or a this.
Yeah.
All that gone.
Yeah.
And so it just was like, oh, that was something.
I'm sorry.
Look at how that happened.
Really frustrating.
It is. It is frustrating.
Yeah.
Sometimes it just makes you want to, you know, jump on a ship.
Yeah. Or walk the plank.
Or walk the plank. walk the plank.
Yeah.
Wah, wah, wah.
Please take a moment to remember, if you're friends of the hosts of One Bad Mother, you should assume that when we talk about other moms, we're talking about you.
If you are married to the host of One Bad Mother, we definitely are talking about you.
Nothing we say constitutes professional parenting advice.
Biz and Teresa's children are brilliant, lovely, and exceedingly extraordinary.
Nothing said on this podcast about them implies otherwise.
Teresa.
Yes.
Pirates.
Uh-huh.
Or as I like to call them, the glitter of the sea. Uh-huh. Because once they appear in your life, they are everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about pirates today. Mm-hmm. And why talk about pirates? Why do we want to even talk about them?
Well, the reason I brought pirates up to you was that I was talking to Oscar in the car the other day, and he was asking me some hard questions about pirates. And I was like, as I was answering them, and I was answering them honestly to the best of my ability without, like, really trying to freak him out. Like, I tried to be like,
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, walking the plank, like, was what they did when, like somebody would die if they walked the plank. Like, you would walk the plank, and that means you die. Like, you drown in the ocean.
Yeah.
Because I'm not going to lie to him about that, and he's, like, pointedly asking me.
Yeah, but what would the lie even be about walking the plank?
Well, right, but so they've been playing walking the plank at school and stuff, and so, like, because they're doing, like, water play a lot, you know? So they would probably have, like, little pools set up in the yard, and so, like, I just explained, well, yeah, like, we like to joke about that and have fun with it, but, like, that's what that actually, you know, means.
Yeah.
And then he's like, well, why would they do that to each other? Like, aren't they friends? And then he's like, oh, but they're bad guys. And so we kind of got into, like, well, what do they actually do?
Yeah.
And as I was explaining this and, like, talking to him about it, and he's fine. He was, like, fine. But I was thinking, like, is pirates, like, the one last thing, like, or one of the last main things of childhood that, like, we still really celebrate and encourage, like, in terms of imaginary play with young kids, that really comes from a very dark place. I mean, like, is there any argument that, like, no,
pirates,
I mean, like,
are great?
Yeah. And then he's like, are the pirates real? And I was like, well, pirates are totally real. Like, there's still pirates. They might not look exactly the way you're imagining them.
Yeah.
But, like, it's a really hard life.
Yeah.
And that's real.
Despite what movies tell us.
Yeah.
Well, but, like, okay. So, yes, I think pirate. Yeah. Once, as soon as you asked the question, I was like, I don't know.
Yeah.
Like, because pirates fall into this, like, area of, like, archetypes that aren't, like, really based in reality. Sort of, like, ghosts or, like, vampires, right? Like, we still talk about them and, like, play those things and imagine them.
Yeah.
But they are absolute, like, what we're doing with them and imagining them in our play
yeah.
is absolutely nothing like a ghost is not walking around in a sheet.
Right.
Right? A vampire is probably not
you believe
super
ghosts
fancy.
Are real.
Well, right, but I mean, like, yes, I understand that pirates are still real,
right.
but
okay.
they are, but the archetype that we're using
right.
is not
right.
real.
Right.
right. Is not, and the thing about pirates. The problem with pirates.
Yeah.
This is new children's book.
Yeah.
The problem
yeah.
with pirates is just one of the problems yeah. is what you were just talking about. The thing is that there's all this fun imaginative play.
Yeah.
But there's also this side of pirates that you absolutely do not want to have to talk to your kids about, like murder.
Yeah.
Rape.
Yeah.
Their punishments, hanging them. Yeah. They were hung. They
that
were.
Their job right, is stealing.
Full of disease.
Yeah.
You know what
yeah.
I mean? Like there
hygiene
was
problems.
Hygiene problems.
And, yeah.
yeah.
Just nastiness.
Oh, they are.
All kinds of nastiness.
Nasty.
Yeah. And like mental health problems.
Sure.
Like being out there and like
the
lots sea. Of drinking and like.
Yeah, the
just...
rum. Yes. The rampant alcoholism.
Yeah.
What was it? Stefan was telling me. Stefan used to work for this marketing company in New York, and one of their clients was Captain Morgan.
Uh-huh.
And, like, there was this guy's job was to be Captain Morgan uh-huh. and, quote, unquote, he got, like, paid a shit ton of money to be the pirate who brought the party.
Uh-huh.
He would come
right.
in, like, dressed as a pirate,
yeah.
bring in the party.
Oh, my God.
But, like, all right, let's actually talk about where we see pirates in our lives.
Okay.
Right? Because, like, there's, like, Peter Pan. There's Jake and the Neverland Pirates. There's Pirates of the Caribbean.
Mm-hmm.
There's the very famous Pirates of the Caribbean ride at Disneyland, which they are in the process of remaking mm-hmm. to make the pirates less rapey and less woman-selling.
Mm-hmm.
That's like
yeah.
the big thing
yeah.
in it. There's
pirates in a lot of kids shows is
yes.
where it comes up. I think
for
more
us,
for
right.
us, right? Like Paw Patrol has like
oh,
multiple pirate like episodes
do.
And books.
Yeah.
Even.
And there's a lot of kids books. Like there's like a pirate babysitters. Don't leave the baby with the pirates or whatever.
Oh my God.
I know.
Amazing.
And there's pirates don't change diapers or something,
oh.
which is very funny. It's very funny.
Okay.
There's a lot of pirate stuff because again, I think it's because it's this archetype that
yeah.
we haven't necessarily yet said, that's probably not the best thing
right.
to sell the kids. Like,
yeah.
it's again, the one that we're selling,
yeah.
the one that's on the TVs and stuff, is just this super fun.
Yeah, super fun version
yeah.
of this other thing. You're right. It is. It's like a whole separate
yeah,
thing.
Yeah, not at all based
yeah.
in reality.
But what's interesting is that so many of those characteristics
yeah.
and like themes and traditions are so appealing to young kids that like without
yeah.
any sort of like basis in reality,
sure.
It's still so enjoyable.
There's like, adventuring.
Yeah.
There's, I mean, there. Look, I think there actually is real positive play experiences
uh-huh.
in good guys, bad guys, right? Like, I mean, I do, because you're learning, like, these boundaries of what makes a good guy, what makes a bad guy on some level.
Oh,
like,
I have a really hard time with that.
Do you?
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's talk about that. Because,
okay.
like, there's, I don't know. I feel like if kids have the opportunity to understand that this person's playing the bad guy and this, and then they swap roles, they kind of have an opportunity to learn a little bit about that in the world without it being like horrible,
uh-huh.
like a horrible way to experience it.
Uh-huh.
Play experience. I mean, like Paw Patrol's got bad guys, right?
Right.
Like somebody's a bad guy and we're figuring out what that means a little bit without hopefully them experiencing a real bad situation, right?
Right.
So that's, to me, I feel like that's been part of play. A lot of those scenarios in which that happens, we don't play anymore,
mm-hmm.
I think. But go ahead. Yeah.
Oh, no, it's not a big thing. I really don't like good guys versus bad guys.
Yeah.
Like, that's not how I see the world. And
right.
I think, like, a lot of problems in our world stem from us teaching our kids
yeah.
that there are bad people in the world
oh,
versus
yeah.
good people in the world.
Okay.
And it's a totally separate
yeah.
subject from
no,
what we're talking about
is.
Right now. But
it
like,
is.
I think I hear what you're saying about like, I've definitely seen, like, especially Oscar with his friends, sometimes they want to be bad.
Yeah.
And they're, like, having fun being bad.
Right.
And that is really interesting. Like, if you don't get into, like, if you try to separate hurtful
yes.
or bad, like, acts from that makes you a bad guy or a bad person, I can tolerate a little bit more of it. But, like,
because
right. obviously everybody makes mistakes and, like, there are things that you can do that are hurtful, and then you can make amends for those things. So
right.
not that I don't think there's any value in that kind of play. Like, I definitely do think there is. And it's interesting because as you're saying that, like, I'm thinking, so that is, do you think that is what's appealing about pirates? Like,
yeah.
it's a way for them to kind of be bad, to
but
try out being bad, but in, like, a sanctioned
but
way.
But a faked way. Yeah, like, actually, yes. As,
yeah.
as we start talking about this, I do think so. Because, again, the style of pirating that most kids are playing is this total fake version of pirates and the big things that they're doing. They're stealing treasure. They're taking over mm-hmm. the ship. They're, you know, capturing somebody and,
yeah.
you know, that kind of thing, walking uh-huh. the plank. It is like a cartoon version of real crimes,
uh-huh.
of real bad things. So I think if a pirate with a parrot on their shoulder and, like, a big fancy hat,
uh-huh.
you know, is not a real pirate, our kids are never going to come upon a treasure chest and steal it,
right?
There's no buried treasure. They're not like, right? Like, even though we understand as adults
yeah.
the multiple layers of the
yeah.
history of what pirates were
yeah.
and the current day situation in which pirates are,
yeah.
that's not what our kids are playing.
Yeah.
Right? So I don't
know. I think there's a lot of confusion, though. Like, I think this might not, I mean, it maybe probably doesn't matter all that much,
right.
but I think there is confusion because, like, for example, when I was explaining to Oscar about, like, how pirates make their living by, like, stealing
yeah.
and, like,
yeah.
pillaging other ships and stuff, he was like, no, they hunt for treasure.
Right.
Like, they have a treasure map and they hunt for treasure.
Yes.
And, like, so I'm also thinking, like, well, we're getting, like, a lot of mixed messages here. Like, there's definitely yes. some group of adults who influence my child who are like, we need to make pirates okay.
Yeah.
Like, we need to make pirates, like,
Disney wants
because
to make
if
them
kids,
okay.
Right. Because if kids want to be like them, like, we need to, like, make sure that everything that pirates do is, like,
right.
an okay thing to do.
Yes!
And so, like, we're just hunting for treasure. That doesn't hurt anyone. Like, that treasure's just out there for the taken.
Well, right.
It's been abandoned.
But I will say, the pirates, now that you say that, right? You're
yeah.
like, oh, we need to, you know, there's some group that's saying,
yeah.
let's make this safe and fun.
Yeah.
Right? And as an adult, again, pirates feels like one of those categories where it's a little like, yeah, all right. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
Like, as opposed to,
like, is that hurting someone?
Right.
Right.
As opposed to a number of other things that
oh,
people
yeah.
could play or
oh,
that
yeah.
we used to play
oh, yeah.
in which I absolutely have to say, no.
Yeah.
That's, you know, not.
Yeah.
That true,
right?
Right? Or
yeah.
that action actually is very bad and
yes.
has harmed people their whole lives,
yes.
right? So pirates, again, because it falls into that category
yeah. Yeah.
of, like,
it's like
we can make
it's like
it.
Racially vague.
Yeah. Yes.
It's like, you know, it's like
it's criminally vague.
Yeah. It's very vague. Yeah.
Except for sexy pirates.
Oh.
There's nothing vague about, like, every pirate costume, even for 3-year-old girls,
uh-huh.
is, like, up to the thigh
yeah.
and a bustier.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, let me tell you, there were lady pirates.
Uh-huh.
And lady pirates were not pirating
no.
with their thighs hanging out.
No, they were not.
And bustiers.
No.
That's not a pirate. Lady pirate is not bar wench,
no.
right?
Yeah.
Lady pirate is not
yeah.
bar prostitute or whatever
right.
of the day.
Right.
They were pirates. They probably didn't smell very good either. And they probably weren't that attractive either, given what the male pirates were like.
Right.
That's equal,
yes.
equal disgusting.
Yes.
For equal genders here,
yeah.
right? So it is, sexy pirates, I think, is the one place in which, when that comes up, if we see a pirate costume in the store
mm-hmm.
or somewhere, I actually do sometimes make a comment that is, pirate ladies didn't wear that. It's not what? It's just like Alice in Wonderland. Also, her dress didn't come up to her
I think,
ass.
It probably applies to almost every female-oriented costume.
That is not that an authentic Darth Vader costume. Yeah. I'm pretty sure Darth Vader's bosoms did not just come out cutouts. He didn't have cutouts for his bosoms to come out. So... yeah, I don't know, because there's talk like a pirate today. I mean, there's like all this. I will also say one of the things that makes, and maybe we'll end on this, pirates like glitter to me is the pirate birthday parties. Because I feel like pirate birthday parties have a higher number of garbage related party items.
Sure.
I have a bag of gold coins. Just sitting around the house that Ellis was like, I want to pass these out at a party. I'm like, what the fuck? Like, here's six coins for you. What am I supposed to do with these fucking coins, right? Like, it's just garbage I gave people. And garbage that's still sitting in my house, right? Like beads and like money. And like and it's one of the few ones where we still play with weapons pretty
hardcore. I was just going to say, this is exactly what this made me think of.
Yeah.
Because like... we have, like, a very cheap kids, like, pirate costume that came with, like, a foam sword.
Yeah.
But then one of Oscar's best buddies has, like, a beautiful pirate costume. Uh-huh. Like, a very nice pirate costume. And it came with, according to Oscar, two swords. And, like, I've seen them.
Yeah.
And, like, one of them is, like, a little stabby knife. And the other one is like a bigger, like sword.
Yeah.
And this came up actually in my conversation with Oscar because he was like, what? He was like, oh, so and so's costume has these and this. Like, I really want that. Can I have that? Blah, blah, blah. And it's like so transparent that like he just wants the weapons.
Right.
You know? But he's like, well, what is the weapon for? What did they need? What did pirates need them for?
Murder.
How do you answer that, right? So then that's the question.
Fighting.
So this is, but see, this is how it comes into like, do I answer this in a way that's like honest and like makes it clear that like basically pirates are bad guys? Or if Oscar's like so interested in this, do I just make it sound nice? Like, well, they really needed it to defend themselves or something. Like, if somebody was trying to take their money or their
jungle. They need to use it to cut through a jungle and fight up, but it's all lies.
It's all lies.
I know. So, but also, do you let swords in your house? Because I know you are a
I mean,
gun.
There's a foam one. It's foam, but
But again, it just falls into the camp of sword weapons.
Well, because
I know I totally can also understand, but. At the same time.
But yeah, at the same time, it's a weapon.
It's still a weapon. Yeah. And it, again, the mystique of pirates just is a big forgiveness zone.
It is.
Of
a safety zone
For
taboo.
Thank God. Let us go adrift in the sea on the Biz and Teresa Max Fun ship taboo.
One Bad Mother is supported in part by Audible.
Audiobooks are a great sidekick for summer activities like hiking, road tripping, enjoying downtime outdoors, pushing a stroller, breastfeeding in the middle of the night. Audible has the largest selection of audiobooks on the planet, which lets you fill your summer and time with more stories like, oh, I don't know, maybe my sister's book, American Housewife by Helen Ellis.
Audible members get a credit every month, good for any audiobook in their store, regardless of price, and unused credits roll over to the next month. Didn't like your audiobook? You can exchange it, no questions asked. Start a 30-day trial, and your first audiobook is free. Go to audible.com/badmother or text badmother to 500-500 to get started. Hey, you know what it's time for? This week's Genius and Fails. This is the part of the show where we share our genius moment of the week, as well as our failures, and feel better about ourselves by hearing yours. You can share some of your own by calling 206-350-9485. That's 206-350-9485.
Genius fail time, Teresa. Genius meme.
Wow.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God.
I saw what you did.
Oh, my God.
I'm paying attention.
Wow.
You, Mom, are a genius.
Oh, my God. That's fucking genius.
So I mentioned recently that we've been in a little bit of a rough patch with Gracie, my 6.5-year-old, kind of like getting back into the mode of regular routines. And one thing I did the other day that worked really well in the morning when like I knew she was not in a good mood, but yeah. I still like needed to, I can't remember, I had a question I needed to ask her. I thought of the idea of that I could write her a little note with check boxes as answers so that she could just read the note and check her answer. And I just had a feeling she's going to like this. She's going to think it's cool even though she's in a funk right now. And she did. And it totally worked.
Nice. Yeah. I love that idea.
Yeah.
I really like that.
Just mix it up a little.
Nice. So I took Katie Bell to the doctor. You know, I mean, normally we just don't with the fever sometimes. We let it ride out. And she wasn't complaining about her ears. But, like, I don't know. It just, she had had some other things happening. So we went in to try and get answers for everything. And, again, I have the kid who does not complain about earaches and has a double ear infection. Mm-hmm. But I'm glad we found it out. You know, it's one of those things where I'm like, I'm glad we did it. She's taking the medicine, by the way, because, you know, she has a problem with medicine. It's
great.
A different medicine. But yeah, so it's just, yeah, I was like, oh, yeah, that's what we're doing. So I did it. I feel good that
job.
We did it.
Yes.
Hi, this is a genius moment. I found a babysitter that I really liked while I was still pregnant. I have 4-year-old twins and I was pregnant with our third. And I was having a lot of anxiety about not finding a sitter that I felt comfortable with 2 4-year-olds and a little baby. And I was having a lot of anxiety that my husband and I would be able to get out and not have any time together. So I found somebody while I was still pregnant, and we love her, and she's great. And she comes and helps me out one morning a week, and my husband and I get to have date time. And, yeah, I just am really proud of myself that I did it. And I'm so grateful to her. Thanks for all you do. Bye.
Oh,
I love this. Yeah, it's definitely one of those ones that, like, again, you go to work or you're talking to a friend and you're like, I found a babysitter. It's like, you know, people are like, all right.
Yeah.
But we understand.
Yeah, it's really hard.
That's really hard. And that's like that's so good to have found the person early.
Yeah.
I just,
that's so great.
You're doing a really good job.
You really are.
Failures.
Fail, 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 fail!
You suck.
Fail me, Teresa.
So my kids had a dentist appointment, teeth cleaning, and we had a little bit of time between like pickups from school and camp and going to the dentist. And the dentist was right by Trader Joe's and we needed some stuff from Trader Joe's. And I was like, I'm going to take my kids to Trader Joe's, but like I just knew that they were going to be upset because, like, they don't want to go to the dentist. It's the end of a school day. Like, they're not, it's just, like, not a good zone. But I was like, we need to do this. So I was like, I know. I'll let them, like, pick out something they want as, like, a treat at Trader Joe's because that's, like, a good way to get them to go to the store when they don't want to. And they're like, can we get jelly beans? And I'm like, sure, of course. And then as we're leaving, I'm thinking to myself, I'm literally feeding jelly beans to my children 5 minutes before we go. And I don't even have, like, their toothbrushes or anything.
Yeah.
So they're going to be going into the dentist.
Getting your money's worth.
With jelly beans in their teeth.
Wow.
So that's what I did.
Remarkable.
I know.
Wow.
I know.
Love that one. So Stefan's birthday was recently happening. Words come out of my mouth.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, you know, he'd really like for his birthday to, at some point in time in the future, do a karaoke night with this certain set of friends, you know, small, intimate, but just really fun. Get a room, do the karaoke. And I was like, okay, I'll arrange this for you. And I arrange it and I coordinate everybody's schedules and it's so good. Then I realize it's Katie Bell's birthday.
Oh, my God.
I had totally planned a party for Stefan on Katie Bell's birthday. So I had to cancel his and, like, move his to, like, the end of August or whatever.
Amazing.
But I was like, Oh my God.
So good.
And just to add to the guilt of being a horrible mother, I keep forgetting her birthday's like in 2 weeks. And I'm like, yeah, oh my God, I don't know what we're getting her.
I know.
I haven't finalized her party.
Too. Yeah.
Ah, shit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. So, yay.
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 Hi, this is Jill, and I'm calling with a fail. I was supposed to get Vampire Weekend tickets at 10 a.m. for my daughter. The band is playing near our town. And other than that, they're playing in the UK and Japan and Australia and Chicago. I got busy with work and I forgot, even though we talked about it and my younger daughter was going to do it. And I just felt like I let her down. It's not a big thing. It's a special thing. But normally I feel like I'm killing it as a mom and I just messed up. It was one thing she wanted and I didn't do it. And I could have done it. I had time to do it. I could have reminded myself to do it, and I totally didn't do it. So I feel like I failed her, and just one town over would be so easy to do and so easy to get there. And I can't find anything on the internet to buy tickets at a higher price or any connections in that town. All the people I know who live there don't know the band, don't know how to get tickets. So I just felt like I was really doing a bad job. So I appreciate your podcast. You guys are awesome. You guys are doing a great, great job.
Sucks.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, I'm sorry too.
I feel that fail all over.
Yeah.
I am really sorry that you are doing a horrible job. And I mean, you know, I almost don't want to say that because in the grand scheme of things, you're doing such a good job on everything else. You know what I mean? But also, I totally get this failure.
Yeah.
So I'm sorry.
Yeah, I am too.
Oh.
You are the greatest mom I've ever known. I love you. I love you. When I have a problem, I call you on the phone.
One Bad Mother is supported in part by Care.com, the easy and reliable way to find care for everyone in the family when and where you need it.
Biz and I both have premium memberships. It's the world's largest digital marketplace for finding and managing family care. At Care.com, you can find care for everyone in the family, whether you need childcare while you're at work or need to line up a sitter for a special date night. Care.com is there for you. You can also find housekeepers, dog walkers, tutors, errand runners, and senior care.
To save 30% off a Care.com premium membership, visit care.com/mother when you subscribe. That's care.com/mother for 30% off a premium membership.
Teresa.
Yes.
Let's call someone today. Hey, today we are calling Angela Garbez, who is a Seattle-based writer specializing in food, bodies, women's health, and issues of racial equity and diversity. Garbez began writing for The Stranger in 2006 and became a staff writer in 2014. Her piece, The More I Learn About Breast Milk, The More Amazed I Am, is the publication's most read piece and the inspiration for this book. Garbez grew up in a food-obsessed immigrant Filipino household and now lives in Seattle with her husband and two children. Her new book, Like a Mother, A Feminist Journey Through the Science of Pregnancy, explores the emerging science and long-standing cultural myths of pregnancy and motherhood. Welcome, Angela.
Thank you, Biz, and thank you, Teresa. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. We cannot wait to get into this book. But I'm like, everything in that title, I'm like, bang, bang, zing, ding. I know.
It's almost too much.
Yeah, it is. But before we get into that, I'll ask what we always ask our guests, which is, who lives in your house?
Okay, so in my house, there is me and my husband, Will, and our two daughters. Our oldest daughter is Noli Jo, and she is 3. She's leaning hard on 4. She'll be 4 in October. And Lagaya, who is 4 months old.
Oh.
Whoa.
Well, I love it, Teresa and I both. I feel so like no one's ever in the booth with us. And when people start like telling us, A, how many kids and the ages, our faces are always like, whoa. And I'm like,
your kids are
like,
so young.
They're so little. Yeah. I mean, ours are
ours are young too. But like, like whenever somebody is like doing amazing things, we're always appalled.
That's right.
They have young children.
I know. We're like, whoa. And the deep way of empathy also comes over.
I felt that for sure.
Are you in a closet calling us right now? Because that's happened before.
I was worried about it. I'm in an office that does not belong to me.
But
a good friend of mine, Lindy West, she rented this office space in this really cool building here in Seattle. It used to be an immigration, the INS building, and actually this used to be the corner that's the solitary confinement ward. But it's since been repurposed as more affordable artist studios and spaces.
Whoa!
So it's very cool, and I'm super lucky to have a space to go to because mostly I work out of our office, I'm using air quotes, which is our guest room.
Right.
And usually I've been doing a lot of interviews for this book with the sound of my baby crying in another room.
Yeah. You should just take a nap as soon as we're done on the phone. You can take a nap while we're on the phone.
I definitely lay on the floor here.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, 4 months. That's incredible.
Yeah, it's really, if I had timed it at all, I definitely would not have planned to have a newborn at the same time that my book came out.
Sure.
That's just sort of how life went. You know, I had someone early on in the promotional life of this book say, well, having a baby it's really on brand for you, wouldn't you say?
Wow.
And I had to stop myself from being like, fuck you.
Yeah.
Also, I turned 40 this year and I had a miscarriage. And if you want to talk about that, we can talk about that. And that's how I ended up I had a baby when I had a baby.
Yeah.
These things are not planned, and I certainly did not plan it with my sanity in mind.
And you also don't always have the most control in the world over your book and like your timing of your book and when your book's going to come out. Like, that is also hard.
Such a gross thing to be like, oh, how convenient you've had this baby to promote.
You can hold the baby while you're being interviewed.
Because that's what we love doing. Really, not only do we become mothers very naturally in an emotional sense, we absolutely want to carry them around
like an accessory
while we're trying to balance our career.
Yeah.
I have actually also I've shown up for interviews, and when I was in New York, I went to 2 interviews where people were like, oh, I thought you were going to have a baby with you.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, well, sorry. Just me.
I know. You should feel horrible for not having your baby with
you. What is that about? Because it's a little bit like, you want me to work 10 times harder to be be kind of distracted because do you know what I mean? It's just really weird.
Yeah. And I mean, there's part of me that thinks you see those, videos of the Australian, congressperson representative breastfeeding. And I just think wow, that takes a lot of focus.
Yeah.
And I mean, I believe we should be able to bring our kids, right?
Yeah,
they're part of our lives. We shouldn't have to hide them away.
Yeah.
And care is real and all of that. But so sometimes I get sort of torn. I'm like, I would like to be able to bring my kid. But the truth is, it's really difficult to do an interview when your kid's reaching for things or when you're breastfeeding, and exactly what you were saying, when it's hard to do 14 things at once.
Yeah.
I just agree that we should all be able to.
Yeah.
And it should be totally nobody bats an eye at it on the one hand. And also nobody should question that sometimes it helps you stay more focused if you have somebody else who can help you with your kid while you're working.
I'm gonna throw out this crazy notion here that the choice to leave that there should also be the room of understanding and forgiveness that we can just take care of our children however we would like to.
Yes.
Yes.
Anyway,
shocking.
And I'm sure, to be fair, I bet a lot of people are not, they're not trying to make me feel bad.
No.
It's already it's a fraught state.
Well, not 90%. We talk about on the show all the time that almost everything people say to us either while we're pregnant or when you're not pregnant at all, whatever it is, most of it probably comes from a place of just whatever. When are you going to have kids or whatever? Or, oh, are you super uncomfortable? Yeah. You look huge. Whatever it is. It's not, they're not like, I want to go out and make a pregnant or a mom or just a woman in general feel like shit today, right? Like, usually doesn't, but it's like whatever we've got going
on. I mean, there are
those people too, but. Well, yes, yes, those people definitely exist. But they're usually more identifiable, easily to identify. All right, let's get into the book.
Okay.
I want to start with. And we've kind of all been through this, and I really like that it led you to doing a book. But you say, like in the intro, that when you started the book, you were beat, tired, long list of questions, and surprise, the questions that you were looking for weren't really answered in a lot of the pregnancy books you read, which we discover all the time.
Yes.
So, but I think the questions are really varied. So for you, what were your questions that you felt weren't getting answered?
Yeah, well, I mean, so I worked as a food writer for years. So the fact that I have written a book about the science and culture of pregnancy is in many ways the biggest surprise of my life.
Right.
I mean, I think, you know, you start down a path, you don't have to be open to where you end up. So I'm happy to be where I am. But what had happened for me was the questions were really about, I was working full-time as a food writer and I was breastfeeding, which meant that I was pumping and I basically had two full-time jobs and I was thinking about food all the time, but then I was also producing food all the time. And, you know, women face tremendous pressure to breastfeed. And I was fortunate because breastfeeding went pretty smoothly for me, but you know, 10 months into it, I was searching for more motivation, you know, because it was exhausting and it was, even when it goes smoothly, it's still hard. And I felt unprepared for how hard it would be and how drained physically I would feel often. And so it really started with that, where I felt like for all of, you're told over and over, it's really hammered home that breast milk is best and breast milk immunologically is best for the baby. And I kind of just blindly accepted that at the beginning. And then as time went on, I was like, well, how exactly is it better for a baby? You know, like I'm seeing babies, my friends have babies that are formula fed. They seem fine, right? I know that they're loved and they're cared for and they're thriving. So I just asked, like, how does that work? And people didn't have the answer. There was nothing explaining how that worked. You know, I asked a nurse and like, it was sort of a blank stare that was like, well, it just is. Yeah. And so I was like, well, you know, and at the time I was on staff at this newspaper and they were like, it's about time that you wrote a feature. What kind of stuff are you thinking about? And I was like, well, I can't stop thinking about breast milk. Yeah. And I wasn't so interested in, you know, is it better than formula? I was interested in why, like, why do we say it's good and how does it work? What is it as a substance? And I believe, you know, my perspective as a food writer is that food is a reflection of who we are as a culture and our individual stories. And I thought, maybe breast milk is that too, you know? So the cool thing about being a journalist is you can call up an expert and they feel somewhat obligated to answer your questions. Whereas if you're just a person asking a question at the doctor's office, they don't really feel like they, oh, you have full information. So I found a very cool woman who's an evolutionary biologist who studies mammalian milk. And she was incredible. I think also I looked in, her name is Katie Hind, and she runs a very cool and deeply nerdy blog called Mammal Suck Milk. And she just was really enthusiastic and talked about it from an evolutionary perspective and knew a lot about breast milk, like a lot of the research that's being done on it now. And what she told me was that what scientists are beginning to understand and all of what we know about physiology indicates that really what happens is when an infant suckles at its mom's breast, a vacuum is created and the milk gets sucked into the nipple and the mammary gland has receptors that can read it. And if they detect things like an infection, it can trigger the mother's body to produce antibodies to fight that.
Yeah.
And so that I thought was like, well, why doesn't everybody know that? And I was hoping, you know, a few other people might be interested in this. I thought maybe breastfeeding moms and
I wrote about it, you know, incorporating some public health stuff and some food stuff, thinking maybe the audience could extend slightly larger than people interested in this. But what happened was within 2 days, it had like 200,000 shares and it went viral.
Yeah.
And I never predicted that that would happen. And so the opportunity to write the book came from that. And when my agent first contacted me, she said, you know, do you want to turn this into a book? And I said, you know, I'd love to talk about that, but to be totally honest, there's no way I could write an entire book about breast milk. Like, yeah. It's really cool, but, you know, your baby will probably be fine without breast milk. And I don't care enough to write a whole book about
yeah.
it.
Yeah. You know? I just wanted this one question answered, and now I'm good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But what came out of that conversation was my agent said, well, do you have any other questions? Or do you have any other ideas that are related to this topic that you could turn into a book? And that's when I was like, well, yeah, I have like ding, 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 ding. I have a list of questions so long that never got addressed while I was pregnant and, you know, in the immediate postpartum newborn phase, because you're too busy just trying to stay alive.
Yeah.
You know, but I had two miscarriages before I had my oldest daughter. I was really, really interested in what the placenta was. Like, what is this organ? This entirely new organ that I'm growing along with another person inside my body. Why don't we talk about that?
Yeah.
You know, and then I felt really like, why hundreds of thousands of people give birth every day? Why did I have no idea what it was going to be like or what would happen until it happened to me?
Right.
And I just felt like if there's some of this new science out there, I just thought, maybe there's more to learn and maybe people want to know and maybe I can be someone that can help put that information out into the world.
Well,
I think that's a very long answer to not quite the question you asked.
No, that got us lots of places, which I enjoyed listening to. So I want to ask, given the surprise and of what you learned with the breast milk, with all the other stuff that you did cover in the book as well that you pursued, was there any like one thing in particular, or what was like one of the biggest surprises, like science wise, that you were like, this is the coolest thing? Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of it is, but I mean, was there anything that you personally were like, what the fuck? I can't believe.
Oh that. Yeah. So yeah. The thing that really blows me away, and that we know, like, well, one, the underlying thing that I found in all of this stuff is
we know nothing.
What we should know. Yeah. We should really know a lot, because people have been getting pregnant and having babies for hundreds of thousands, millions of years.
That's ladies' stuff.
Yeah, but we've never valued female reproductive health. Pretty much every scientist and expert that I talked to said a variation of the same thing, which is, compared to what we know nothing.
Wow.
And, you know, when I decided to study this, I was totally surprised. There was nothing in the literature. And so that was, you know, it was a huge, I didn't know that going into it, and that informed the perspective of the book. But the thing that blows me away that we probably know the least about is something called microchimerism.
I don't know what you're talking about.
So basically, when you're pregnant, the fetus and the mother exchange cells.
You know,
they cross over the placenta. And so they have found, so women who gave birth to male babies, they've found male DNA in their brains like 70 years later.
Whoa. So, in the mother's brain.
Yeah, in the mother's brain. And they also find, and most of what they've discovered, like, so people thought this was rare when they first found it, and that maybe it was like indicative of disease or something bad was going on, right? Because it sounds like sci-fi.
Yeah.
And what they found, I mean, really the biggest thing that they've learned in the last couple of decades is that it's actually very common, that most of us probably have cells from our mother, possibly cells from our older siblings, possibly cells from our maternal grandmothers in our bodies, that it's actually comprised of other people in small ways. And we don't really know what those cells do. You know, there's studies that they think that maybe fetal cells might encourage breast milk production. They might also help with wound healing, but they can become neurons and beating heart muscle. And
wow.
I think that it's beautiful in many ways. It also, to me, you know, like my interpretation of it too was like, oh, yeah, I mean, I felt different.
Huh, yeah.
Like a cellular level, and in a way that I couldn't quite pinpoint after I had a kid. And this was, like, to me, it just felt like total validation. That's actually real. But I've heard from women since the book came out. I just got an email this week from a woman that it broke my heart and put it back together She was like, I had twins and I lost one of those twins late in pregnancy. And she's like, I didn't know anything about microchimerism. And she's like, but it's helped me because it, for people who have lost pregnancies or lost children, to know that that part of that child very likely lives in your body in some way is this is incredible. It's such a comfort.
Wow.
So that really, you know, and if we knew more about microchimerism, we might know more about autoimmune diseases that affect women more. And that's, I spoke to an expert who talks about that link. So that's probably to me the most amazing thing that I learned and the thing that I actually felt my mind exploding when I was thinking about it.
I know, right?
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about, let's wrap up on, because we could spend 8 hours talking about the book, or just veering off into various feminist rants about pregnancy and women. But let's actually wrap up on something else that you touch on in the book, which is how advice and information has traditionally been passed on when it comes to pregnancy and birth. Like, I mean, like you talk about, like, I have all these questions and none of it's in literature, but if you go out into the field and you start talking to people, there's a lot of information, you know, that you have to kind of weed through and decide. Can you talk some about how we, you know, sort of distribute information when it comes to pregnancy and birth for women?
Yeah. Well, I mean, we live in this day and age where you can summon up information in a matter of seconds to whichever screen you happen to be looking at, you know?
Right.
So there's this flood of information. And so I think we've really, well, for me, I had to break, I can only really speak for myself, but I just accepted, like, this is how we get information, right? We get it from books and we get it from doctors. But, you know, again, as we've been saying, people have been having babies for centuries, right?
Yeah.
And, like, it was definitely, there's a tradition of storytelling and, like, wisdom that's passed down from women through midwives and mothers and grandmothers. And, you know, when it comes to your own body, you are an expert, right? So there's, but we've kind of been conditioned now to not trust ourselves and to not trust stuff that's been passed down. You know, it's like old wives' tales or that sort of thing. We really devalue, you know, that sort of folk medicine, but that's real and it's an experience. So I, in the book, I wanted to talk to people about their lived experiences and how things felt to them, right? And like our own instincts and to make space for that. But also to point out that traditional guidebooks, and this is the problem that I had, I read so many books when I was pregnant and they all kind of made me feel terrible. We frame all of the information in this way that's like, this is good and this is bad. Don't do this, do that. You know, you should do this. You shouldn't do that. And it sets women up to really feel like they're doing things poorly.
Yes.
And that, as I, the more I read, the more I was like, wait a second. This is really a moral framework, which is how we frame a lot of pregnancy and motherhood.
Yeah.
And what if it's bullshit? Like, what if we just took away good and bad? And what if we just gave people information and trusted that they could make informed decisions that always prioritize, like that people want the best for their babies, and they want the best for themselves. And that's kind of what I wanted to do in the book, because I feel like there's not enough of that.
It's if we do that,
to trust ourselves.
Yeah, the world will explode if we do that. Then what will what will people have, you know, time to feel judged or to judge or to feel guilty or to stay up at 2 o'clock in the morning wrestling with? I know, you know, like what if we gave power back to people and their children? That would be insane. This is
right. Like, can you imagine? Can you imagine that world? Like, if we all just felt confident in the decisions we made and we didn't really care what other people were doing, like, I feel like I could get a lot more done.
Yeah, I know. I'd be a lot less stressed out. That's exactly right. Well, I just want to say thank you so much, Angela, for coming on the show and for writing this book. Guys, it's such a great book. And you know how we feel about, especially when it comes to science and looking at what we've been told in terms of having children, raising children, all of that. We are science nerds. So this touches on that really nicely. Again, the book is called Like a Mother, which is such a great name. Like a Mother, A Feminist Journey Through the Science of Pregnancy. And we'll link everybody up to where they can find out more about it. And you, thank you, Angela, for joining us.
Thank you, Viz. Thank you, Teresa. It was great to be on.
Absolutely. Have a good day enjoying time in the office by yourself.
Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye.
Hi, everybody. I'm your oldest brother, Justin McElroy.
I'm your middlest brother, Travis McElroy.
And I'm your sweet baby brother, Griffin McElroy.
Me and 3,000 of your closest friends just found your next podcast obsession.
Cereal!
Okay, but like the second best podcast.
Cereal!
Oh, just listen to my brother and me on MaximumFun.org.
There you go.
Perfect.
Perfect.
Thank you.
You probably know that Max Fun podcasters are funny in the talking way, but did you know they also are funny in the writing way? We are very excited to announce that John Hodgman and Paula Poundstone wrote books that have been named as semi-finalists for the 2018 Thurber Prize for American Humor. John Hodgman, celebrated fake internet court presider, is the host of Judge John Hodgman and was recognized for his book Vacation Land. Paula Poundstone's book is called The Totally Unscientific Study of the Search for Human Happiness, and you can hear her expound on happiness and many other topics on her new podcast, Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone. The Thurber Prize is one of the highest awards for humor writing in the United States, and we are proud to have both these authors on Maximum Fun every week. Paula Poundstone and John Hodgman, congratulations.
We are back. And I'm still thinking about our conversation with Angela Garbez and her book.
Yep.
Like a Mother. It is very empowering.
Yeah.
I love it.
I love it too.
Yeah.
Let's keep learning.
Let's keep learning and asking questions.
Yeah.
And trusting that it's okay to ask those questions.
Totally. And let's keep making our own decisions and feeling confident about those decisions.
And that our decisions have nothing to do with other people's decisions.
Yeah. Right on.
Wow.
Yeah.
Speaking of right on, let's listen to a mom have a breakdown.
Hi, this is a rant. 2:30 in the morning, and it's my 30th birthday, which should be really wonderful. And this rant all starts with my wonderful husband, who's been traveling for work a lot, surprising me by coming home in time for my birthday, which is important to me. And so that should be a genius on his part. But then our 8-month-old daughter woke up and he tried to go comfort her back to sleep because he was really excited to see her. But of course, when she saw him, she got really excited and just wanted to play. That was at midnight. It's 2:30 in the morning and she just fell back to sleep, which means I've been awake for the first 2.5 hours of my birthday, trying to get my baby back to sleep. After a while of doing the solo parenting thing, and of course, I got out of bed being like, fuck, she's finally asleep, and my husband is snoring on the couch in the living room, and I just needed to get this off my chest, so hopefully I can get some sleep and actually have a decent birthday. You're doing a great job. Bye. Thanks.
You are doing an amazing job.
Yeah, you are.
And there's a couple of things that I think you touch on here that I think are important to talk about. Like, one, birthdays? I think, like, the more birthdays I have as a parent, the more it becomes crystallized what's happening.
Yeah.
And I feel like...
Really nice way
describing
that.
Yeah. I feel like, I mean, because I've gone through the whole, like, it's not going to be a big deal.
Yeah.
To, it's a really big deal. Why am I so disappointed, right?
Yeah.
Like, and I think it's because there's something about birthdays that magnifies the change to self-identity.
Yes.
Right? Like
yes.
It really
yes.
is one of those big time mirrors.
Yeah.
Where like it just things that wouldn't bother you more. Because it makes you feel more like this is this day that's
right.
supposed to be all about me.
Yeah.
And it just is almost never like gels.
Yeah, well, I think also a lot of us, like, I know this is true for me in some way. Like, I feel certain feelings on my birthday
yeah.
that I have no control over that, like, never
yes.
happen on other days of the
yes.
year that, like, I don't always necessarily like or want or choose, but they're just happening.
Happy birthday.
And, yeah, I'm like, and that's just so weird. Like,
yeah.
I don't know what it is. It's just whatever it is, it's there. And that is something that's been there.
Yeah.
And then now everything is different, but those feelings are still there.
Yeah.
And there's something that is clashing.
Yeah.
There.
It clashes. So that,
yeah.
that's a big thing happening. The other thing, there's also something about everybody else being asleep.
Oh, yeah.
And you not being asleep
yeah,
yet.
Yeah. There's something weird about that.
That feels weird.
Yeah.
And emotional.
Yeah.
Especially when you have really young children in the house. Again,
yeah.
it's one of those things that reminds you it is not what it once was.
Right.
And can feel super elevated in the moment.
Oh, yeah.
So we've thrown in a little birthday elevation.
Yeah.
We've thrown in an everybody's sleeping but me elevation.
Yeah.
This is not going to be a delicious cake. And then the last thing you talk about is, you know, your partner's been traveling and when... If you're in a partnered relationship and that person is traveling a lot and you are the primary in like every aspect suddenly, and then the other parent comes back home, that sort of can highlight. And like if anything goes off schedule, whatever that is for you, whatever
yeah.
you set up to survive
yeah.
and to make this work.
Yeah.
When something goes off, like...
Which it will.
Yeah. It absolutely will. So,
yeah.
like, the sleep is disturbed. I mean, all the things that happen make total sense.
Yeah.
Of course he wants to go in and see the man. Of course
yeah.
he wants... Right? But, like, again, that elevates
yeah.
this feeling of something broke. Like, you...
Yeah.
you like, it pulls up resentment, I think.
Yeah.
And it pulls up... loss of control some,
yeah.
like I had all this, right? So like, yeah. you're in like a big stew of like having light shined on stuff in a way that doesn't normally shine.
Yeah, and I'm just thinking like,
yeah.
nobody like looks forward to their future
yeah.
family life thinking like, and my partner will be gone for days at a time. And when they come home, it'll be a weird adjustment
yeah.
period. And then we'll all like, that's
right.
never part of like
the vision. I wonder what I'm
going
to need
future.
To think about my birthday when
yeah.
we have a family.
I'm going
right?
to have to decide at 1 o'clock in the morning, should I be really weird and say, no, don't go in? Or should I be like really laid back and say like, sure, go get her, even though I know it's going to ruin everything. Like
this falls into that list of things no one tells you to really prepare for
yeah.
kids in your life.
Yeah.
But that is absolutely true. No one has ever had the conversation. I wonder what I need to do at 1 o'clock in the morning when my partner has been traveling
yeah.
and wants to go in and see the baby.
And it's kind of his turn, but
it's my birthday
yeah.
and I'm going to have feels. And
yeah.
so, yeah,
oh my God.
Yeah, that's a lot.
It's
you have,
just so hard.
You have every,
yeah.
that is.
Plus like 2:30 in the morning is like the worst time.
It's
like
hard to.
Anytime between like 1 a.m. and 3 a.m.,
yeah.
like our bodies should be asleep at
Ooh.
Between 1 and 3. Like anytime I'm up during those hours,
yeah.
it feels like I'm in a very dark place. Like
yeah.
before when I, before
yeah.
1 a.m., I can kind of deal with like, it's really late. It's like the middle of the night kind of.
Yeah, I used
and
to
like
party
after,
this late.
Yeah,
and now
exactly.
I go to sleep.
Exactly. And then if it's like, you know, 4 a.m. or something, it's like, whoa, it's really early.
Yeah.
You know, but like 1 to 3,
yeah.
that is
not.
Things are not going to feel good at that hour.
They are not.
No.
Hence the hotline.
Yes, the hotline.
Way to use the hotline
good
correctly.
Good job, yeah.
Hey, you are doing an amazing job.
Yeah, you really are.
You really are.
Yeah.
And it sounds like everybody in your house is as
yes,
well.
Yes, so totally.
But none of that negates
yeah.
the feelings.
Mm-hmm.
I am very sorry.
Yeah, happy birthday.
Happy birthday. Teresa.
Yes.
What did we learn today? I have a question.
Okay.
Did we ruin pirates?
I hope
or
we
did
didn't.
We learn that pirates are going to be one of those things that are okay.
I think they're fine. I hope that that's a. I hope that that's the takeaway.
I mean, it brought up a lot of questions. I don't think we thought pirates were going to bring up for us when we were saying, ha ha, let's do pirates.
Yeah.
But like, not sure.
Whatever. It's whatever, you guys. It's whatever you want it to be.
It's fucking pirates.
I don't see any of us being like, I'm putting my foot down. No more pirates.
That's right. So enjoy your pirate birthday parties.
Yep.
Enjoy finding booty everywhere you go.
Yes.
And, you know, make it whatever you want to make it. We also continue to learn that there's just not enough to prepare us for the situations we find ourselves in after children enter our lives.
Yeah.
Surprise.
Yep.
That's the surprise that keeps on giving.
Yes.
And we learned, you know, Teresa, you said it really best. We all should start working towards being confident in our choices and decisions. And know that those decisions could change, and that's okay.
Yeah.
And know that other people's decisions have nothing to do with us, and ours have nothing to do with them.
I agree, and I also really like the idea of asking for information and not asking for opinions sometimes. Like, I feel like
it's a good way to
we
frame
are
it.
Very... I mean, I'm all about consulting professionals who know what they're doing. Like, I appreciate that I have trusted professionals in my life in, like, all areas of my life. That's great. But, like, there's a separate thing that I sometimes need, which is just information to use to make my own decision.
Yes.
So I like being conscious now of, like, the difference between those two things. Like, I think it's important for us to be aware. Like, sometimes we're asking for one and we're getting the other.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. That's a really good thought. Yeah. Good job.
Thanks.
Yeah. Everybody, you're doing a remarkable job.
You really are, guys.
It's really a lot.
It's so much.
It's just layer after layer of lots. And you're all slogging through it like a champ.
Yeah, you are.
You're doing it.
Yes.
Good job. Teresa?
Yes.
You're doing a very good job.
Thank you, Biz. So are you.
Thank you. We will talk to you guys next week.
Bye. Bye.
I got to low down mama blues. I got to low down mama blues. Got to low. Low down mama blues, got a low down mama blues, you know that right.
We'd like to thank Max Fun, our producer, Hannah Smith, our husbands, Stephen Lawrence and Jesse Thorne, our perfect children who provide us with inspiration to say all these horrible things, and of course, you, our listeners. To find out more about the songs you heard on today's podcast and more about the show, please go to MaximumFun.org/OneBadMother. For information about live shows, our book, and press, please check out OneBadMotherPodcast.com.
One Bad Mother is a member of the Maximum Fun family of podcasts. To support the show, go to MaximumFun.org/donate.
Well, Daddy may be fussing by, got low down mama blue. Oh, said Daddy may be fussing by, got low down mama
blue. MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.